cabinet members' business. Consideration of motion M312, Special Committee on Subsection 223.1 of the Criminal Code, in the name of Mr. Woodworth.
Mr. Woodworth, seconded by Mr. Watson, moves that a special committee of the House be appointed and directed to review the declaration in subsection 223.1 of the Criminal Code, which states that a child becomes a human being only at the moment of complete birth, and to answer the questions hereinafter set forth. That the membership of the special committee consists of 12 members, which shall include 7 members from the government party, 4 members from the official opposition, and 1 member from the Liberal Party, provided that the chair shall be from the government party, that the members to serve on said committee be appointed by the Standing Committee on Procedure and House Affairs, and the membership report of the special committee be presented to the House no later than 20 sitting days after the adoption of this motion. The substitutions to the membership of the special committee be allowed, if required, in the manner provided by Standing Order 114.2, that the special committee have all the powers of a standing committee as provided in the standing orders, and that the special committee present its final report to the House of Commons within 10 days after the adoption of this motion with answers to the following questions. 1. What medical evidence exists to demonstrate that a child is or is not a human being before the moment of complete birth? 2. Is the preponderance of medical evidence consistent with the declaration of subsection 223.1 that a child is only a human being at the moment of complete birth? 3. What are the legal impact and consequences of subsection 223.1 on the fundamental human rights of a child before the moment of complete birth? 4. What are the options available to Parliament in the exercise of its legislative authority in accordance with the Constitution and decisions of the Supreme Court to affirm, amend, or replace subsection 223.1? Debate. The Honourable Member for Kitchener Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Oriental proverb says that the beginning of wisdom is to call all things by their right names. It's in the hope of reaching such wisdom that I propose a study of Canada's 400-year-old definition of human being. Perhaps that ancient definition made sense when leeches and bloodletting were standard medical practices, but does it make medical sense in the 21st century? Our knowledge has come a long way in 400 years. We now know when a child's organs, from heart to liver to fingers, are fully formed. We can detect when a child's brain functions. Parents watch in real time as their child reacts to stimuli and sucks his or her thumb. None of this was possible 400 years ago when the law struggled to describe who was human. Why is any law defining a human being so important? Why devote time and attention to this question? Why does it matter that such laws are crafted with great care and with utmost honesty? It's sad to even ask this question. It's sad that it's not obvious why our law defining a human being must absolutely be an honest law based on cogent evidence and sound principle. The reason it's so important is that powerful people can strip vulnerable people of all rights by decreeing that they are not human beings. The only way to protect the inalienable rights of all is to protect the inalienable rights of each. As the wise and courageous Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. If basic rights can be denied to even one vulnerable person, they can be denied to anyone. Here's the way the UN Declaration of Human Rights puts it. Quote, recognition of the inherent dignity and of the equal and inalienable rights of all members of the human family is the foundation of freedom, justice, and peace in the world. That's why we should never accept any law that decrees some human beings are not human beings. No policy justifies it. No ideology justifies it. Here's what our 400-year-old definition of a human being says. A child becomes a human being when it has completely proceeded in a living state from the body of its mother. How many Canadians believe that? Believe that birth is a moment of magical transformation that changes a child from a non-human to a human being? Very few, Mr. Speaker. Most Canadians know that our existing definition dishonestly misrepresents the reality of who is a human being. In the 1850s, 9 highly educated, civilized judges of the U.S. Supreme Court decided that African Americans were not persons under U.S. law. If you and I had been in Congress then, wouldn't you have put up your hand and said, that's wrong? In the early 20th century, 9 highly educated, civilized judges of the Supreme Court of Canada ruled that women were not persons under all Canadian laws. If you and I had been in Parliament then, wouldn't you have put up your hand and said, that's wrong? Now, in the 21st century, we discover that we have a 400-year-old law that decrees some children are not human beings. Why not put up your hand and say, that's wrong? We should never accept any law that decrees some human beings are not human beings. If we accept a law that decrees some human beings are not human, the question that must be asked is, who's next? This question was recently answered for us. Professors Alberto Giubilini and Augusta Minerva told us who they think should be next in an article published in the respected Journal of Medical Ethics Online. These are serious academics affiliated with respected universities. If you accept their premise that it is acceptable to decree that some human beings are not human persons, their logic follows inevitably. They point out there is no difference between a child before birth and a newborn. Since we have already decreed that a child before birth is not a human person and a newborn is no different, then they say we can and should decree that a newborn infant is also not a person.
Shame.
Here are their very own words. They say, quotes, the same reasons which justify abortion should also justify the killing of the potential person when it is at the stage of a newborn, end quote. Now, this might sound like a spoof, but it's not. It's a serious conclusion from serious academics, and it is completely logical if it's acceptable to decree without regard to biological reality or principles of human rights that some human beings are not human beings. Now, take up
the Giubilini-Minerva article shows why it's so important that Parliament reject any law that says some human beings are not human beings.
The Minerva article shows why it's so important that Parliament reject any law that says some human beings are not human beings. Mr. Speaker, this is not merely an academic question. In Canada, every year, the deaths of 40 to 50 infants who are born alive and later die are classified as termination of pregnancy. Émile Zola,
that great man of letters, was once accused of treason for defending the fundamental human rights of a French army officer. His words apply to my concern. To my concern about subsection 223.1. I paraphrase them here. I denounce to the conscience of honest people this pressure brought to bear upon the justice of our country.
To the conscience of honest people, this pressure brought to bear upon the justice of our country. Motion 312 simply calls for a study of the evidence about when a child becomes a human being. It does not propose any answer to that question. In fact, it directs the committee to make no decision and no recommendation, but merely to report options. Now, those who believe that the moment of complete birth does somehow transform a child from a non-human into a human being should have enough confidence in their own belief to expose it to an examination of the evidence. What have they to fear from the full flood of light? Why oppose a mere study? Zola's words apply again, and I paraphrase them. The reason they oppose a mere study is, quote, because they dread your good sense. They dare not run the risk of letting us tell all and of letting you judge the whole matter, end quote. Again, using Zola's words, I have had to, quote, fight step by step against an extraordinarily obstinate desire for darkness. A battle is necessary to obtain every atom of truth, end quote. As Zola said, I say, quote, it is on your behalf alone that I have fought, that this proof might be put before you in its entirety, so that you might give your opinion on your consciences without remorse, end quote. Lorsque vous voyez,
When you consider a child before birth, do you see a new human life with a beating human heart and 10 human fingers, or do you see the child as an object and an obstacle or even parasite? Will you at least consider the evidence?
When you consider a child before birth, do you see a new human life with a beating heart and 10 human fingers? Or do you see the child as an object and an obstacle, even a parasite? Will you at least consider the evidence? And if the evidence tells you that a child is a human being before the moment of complete birth, will you close your eyes to the truth simply to justify abortion? Do you need to pretend a child is not human until the moment of complete birth in order to justify abortion? You do not. Even if a child is found to be a human being, it is arguable that the mother's rights will outweigh her child's rights.
But when the rights of two people conflict, it is never, never acceptable to deny that one of them is a human being.
People conflict. It is never, never acceptable to deny that one of them is a human being deserving recognition as a human being. Madam Justice Bertha Wilson, in her 1988 Morgenthaler case, throwing out Canada's abortion law, said the following, quote, the precise point in the development of the fetus at which the state's interest in its protection becomes compelling, I leave to the informed judgment of the legislature, which is in a position to receive guidance on the subject from all the relevant disciplines. It seems to me, however, that it might fall somewhere in the second trimester. End quote. Those are her words. Clearly, this eminent jurist with impeccable feminist credentials believed that it was wrong to refuse all recognition whatsoever to children before birth. Clearly, she felt it is Parliament's duty to remedy that, a view shared by other courts subsequently. In fact, Madam Speaker, almost 80% of Canadians think our law already recognizes the interests and rights of children after the second trimester. They are not aware that our 400-year-old definition of human being actually strips away such rights. When informed, over 70% of Canadians believe our law should recognize the rights of children at least during the third trimester of their development. Madam Speaker, this consensus is greater than on any other issue today. Canadians across our great country are beginning to know and to care about from their own experience the truth that a child is a human being before the moment of complete birth. In other words, Canadians know that subsection 223.1 is dishonest. Do you want a Canada where any person or group can arrange a dishonest law to decree that some human beings are not human beings, as subsection 223.1 does? That's not the Canada Canadians want. And if you search your heart, that's not the Canada you want either. If you care about the truth, you will courageously follow the facts wherever they lead. Canadians expect parliamentarians to embody that courage, that strength, that principled quest for the truth. Will you be seen? Will you be seen as bold for the sake of truth or as fearful? You can trust Canadians to embrace the truth with you. Justice Wilson suggested that Parliament inform itself from the relevant disciplines. Motion 312 asks Parliament to do exactly that. Once the committee delivers its report, Parliament can act on it or take no action. Whatever it chooses, Canadians will at least have the benefit of being informed by 21st century information from all the relevant disciplines, as recommended so many years ago by Justice Bertha Wilson. It's Parliament's duty to do that much at least. A great Canadian once said, "Those who talk the talk of human rights must from time to time be prepared to walk the walk. Heaven forbid that we should fail to do that of which we are capable when the path of duty is clear. Canada is not that kind of nation." End quote. So don't concern yourself with fearful imaginings, but look solely at the dishonesty of subsection 223.1. Cast your vote to expose that to the light of scientific evidence. Canadians will thank you for it. Je vous en compte.
I implore you, let us together reconcile Canadians on these noble... Honourable member has concluded. Questions and comments? The Honourable Member for Gatineau. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'll have the opportunity to reply later, but I just will content myself with asking a question. There's nothing better than hearing lawyers quoting extracts from the same judge, from the same decision, and what my colleague forgets is that what Madam Justice Wilson also said in the Morgenthaler decision, which affected Section 223.1 of the Criminal Code, was that it limited the remedy available to a pregnant woman. It violated her right to life, freedom, and security of her person, and under Section 7 of the Charter, in a way that doesn't comply with the concepts of fundamental justice. Now, I read listened to my colleague's speech, but his motion, 312, is trying to make us believe that it's a serious motion, that he really wants to have an in-depth study, but he already has all the answers, apparently. So I ask him the question. Is he waiting for answers to the motion, the questions in the motion, or has he already answered them?
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker, and I thank my colleague for the question. I've enjoyed working with her on the Justice Committee and always enjoy having a respectful dialogue and exchange of views with any Canadian, any parliamentarian, and particularly another lawyer. The only point at which my views have been inserted into the motion, Madam Speaker, is that it is true I have concluded that the point of complete birth is not a rational or a reasonable point at which a child suddenly transforms from non-human into human being. I have some information about what I think it will be the evidence that might be heard if and when the committee undertakes this study, but I am quite content to allow the witnesses to come, providing that the evidence is heard. The committee can report back to Parliament, and I'm not asking the committee even to choose what evidence to believe or not to believe, but simply to report the options back to Parliament. And whatever my views are on that, I hope that Canadians in the end will overall be informed. What have we to hide from? Why would we be afraid to let the evidence come out?
The
Honourable Member for Bolassa. Thank you, Madam Speaker. My conscience tells me that we have to respect what the social aspect of this and women's consciences. I think we have to respect the fact that we can be pro-choice. We talked a lot about honesty in this speech. There was dishonesty that was alluded to as well. And what I find dishonest in this speech is that, in fact, what this member wants to do is to criminalize abortion once again. So if he wants to be honest, why doesn't he say out loud here that he wants to recriminalize abortion and that his own prime minister said he's going to vote against the motion? In the end, does he not want to just reopen a debate that's already happened and that we want social peace and respect of women's rights in this country?
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker, and my thanks to my colleague for his question. I honestly want what the motion asks, and that is for a respectful dialogue and an open-minded study of the evidence. I would like all Canadians to be informed about this. Whatever views one might have about the issue of abortion, it surely must be helpful to know whether or not a human being actually, a child actually is a human being before the moment of complete birth. Knowing that will inform our discussions and make them more fruitful and help us to reconcile Canadians of differing views on these issues.
Resuming debate, reprise débat, l'honorable.
The Honourable Member for Gatineau. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I thank you, but in fact, I find it so unfortunate, this. My speech will be very respectful, but I think that in all of the speech that my colleague presented here, there's one fundamental aspect that is glaringly absent, and that is women's rights. I think that in his motion 312, I think he uses the word woman one single time in this entire text, whereas the central issue deals with pregnant women. So when I say that, you know, we were very respectful, Madam Speaker, during my colleague's speech, and we would appreciate the same kind of respect in return. We listened carefully to what he said, even if at times we found them difficult to listen to. So here, what my colleague's attempting to do is to bring us to what he calls a conversation on the fetus. Imagine, when I was elected in 2011, if I was told that I'd be here on the 26th of April to have a discussion about fetuses, I would say, go on. What planet do you live on? All of this speech, it leaves from a false premise. So it isn't sound in the beginning. This is an old provision that's 400 years old, he says.
We're talking about certain comments. It's as if you're saying, I could go back to the Stone Age or the Old Testament era and say, let's revisit the first-degree murder. Because this has been shelved for so long that perhaps it's worth taking another look at this type of concept. But it's even more erroneous than that. Under the Criminal Code, Madam Speaker, Article 123, because we have to come back to this notion, because he wants to revisit the definition in Section 223.1 of the Criminal Code, which says when a child becomes a human being. And according to our Criminal Code, which was developed, by the way, in 1892, not in 1600-something, but is it a child becomes a human being within the meaning of this act when it has completely proceeded in a living state from the body of its mother? It's clear. It has to be a live-born child. And this is in our Criminal Code. We're not talking about for or against abortion. We are talking about homicides in the Criminal Code. So what our colleague wants to do, I wasn't sure at the beginning,
I thought, okay, out of good faith, maybe he just wants to create another committee because we don't have enough committees here. He wants to set up a new committee to hear all kinds of scientific experts. And this is the first time we ever heard of the conservatives being interested in something scientific, let me tell you. But, of course, if it has to do with fetus and abortion, then and something that goes against women, great. So that being said, we're going to hear all kinds of medical experts and scientific experts who will come and speak to us of the fetus and show us all kinds of things. So we get the impression that they're actually interested in hearing the answers. Usually when you set up a committee, you're trying to hear both sides of the issue. But in this case, make no mistake about it, this is a full frontal assault on women's fundamental right to choose. You may be for or against abortion. But the fact remains, and this isn't 400 years old, the Morgenthaler decision, all the decisions that were handed down for various aspects always put forward women's inalienable rights over their own bodies. But, of course, the conservatives find this notion very difficult to accept. This is an aberration for them. In fact, what they are trying to say is, you don't agree with me on this issue? Fine. But I don't want to impose it upon you. I impose this on myself, and that's all. Because it's not up to me to tell a pregnant woman who may have been raped, perhaps, who must know something about her child, no matter what her reasons are, it is none of our business. Perhaps our conservative colleagues, Madam Speaker, would never do it. Good for them. They have the right. But who are they to judge these women? All these men across from me, and they come along and say this to women, and I'm using the word men because that's all I see in front of me. I'm not trying to be sexist or pejorative. This is what I have before me. Men. Oh, I'm sorry, I do see one woman or two. Okay, great. Excellent. But, all that being said, it's not up to us to tell a pregnant woman. I would like to emphasize for my colleagues across the way that according to jurisprudence, our jurisprudence, when a woman is pregnant, her fetus is part of her organism. I'm not trying to open up a big scientific debate here. But the rights of one or the other may sometimes be contradictory. The impact of this provision, or the conclusion, if we were to arrive at the conclusion arrived at by our colleague, and this is why I asked the question. You know, Ms. Madam Speaker, it would have been very smart of him to say, I will wait for the decision of the committee, because then what would I have done? But now we know what he's thinking. At least he has the courage of his convictions and was able to stand up and say that in his mind it's clear he's against abortion because he believes that a fetus is a human being. And from there, we see his sentence where he keeps using in all his press conferences, a human being is a human being. The problem is, in the definition of 223, the fetus is not a human being. So that is the definition provided by our colleagues. All well and good, because imagine what would happen. Not only will we recriminalize abortion, you don't have to be overly bright to figure out that if a child becomes a human being as soon as it's conceived or 2 weeks as of 2 weeks after conception or 3 weeks after conception, what would happen then? Well, of course, can anyone in this room stand up and say that we're going to go murder a human being? No. So that's the problem. Abortion becomes recriminalized. You can just imagine. 2 seconds. A pregnant woman. Now, for a government to reduce things to the simplest sense of the term, imagine if the government was now to become interested and involved in how pregnant women are conducting their pregnancies. Because if you're going to protect the fetus as a human being, as my colleague from whose writing I can't recall, but anyway, the mover of motion 312. If we were to accept his theory, it would mean that this pregnant woman, let's say she has issues with substance abuse. Does that mean we're going to now get involved in those people's, in the lifestyle of these people? We have a charter. But I know that the people across from me don't always agree with it, but let me tell you, thank heavens we have this Charter of Human Rights, because I can tell you that this government elected with 39% of the vote, and that was 62% of the electorate voting, is going to tell us that this is what we have to do in our lives. These are people that want to get involved in everything that they're concerned about. It frightens me to death, Madam Speaker. And their argument becomes even more fallacious. And I have discussed this with colleagues, by the way, from all parties. When we get to the issue of the 8 months, 8.5 months, those who are listening to us, please, abortions at 8 or 8.5 months, most of the protocols within the provinces and in the various hospitals, and I can tell you that because this is a decision made by a woman and her doctor, they don't do abortions after 20 months. And if they do, if they were to, it's probably because it's a health problem for the woman. Perhaps her life is at risk. There may be a medical issue, so please stop frightening people. Let's respect the charter. Let's respect decisions made not 400 years ago, but in 1988, in 1990, the year 2000, etc. Let's stop this constant attacks on Canadian women in this country. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Resuming debate, the Honourable Member for Vancouver Centre. On a point of order, the Honourable Member for Kitchener.
Point of order.
Honourable Member for Kitchener-Conestoga.
Madam Speaker, my colleague referred earlier in her speech to the fact that there were no women on this side of the House. I'd like to point out that, in fact, there are. And secondly, Madam Speaker, she knows that it's inappropriate for anyone to refer to the presence or absence of people in the House. So I would ask you to correct that record. Thank you, Madam.
The Honourable Member for Gatineau.
Madame la Présidente, ça se peut...
Madam Chair, this is the only apology I will proffer today. That may have been inappropriate, but I did find it a bit odd to see that we're discussing this motion that deals with women and that it was mostly...
I believe the record has been corrected. Resuming debate. Order, please. Order, please. This is a difficult debate where people, there are strong disagreements. I would ask for respect on all sides of the House, and I will tolerate nothing else. The Honourable Member for Vancouver Centre.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. I rise to speak against Motion 312. Now, Madam Speaker, Motion 312 calls for the creation of a special committee that will evaluate subsection 2231 of the Criminal Code, which currently states, and I quote, that a child becomes a human being within the meaning of this act when it has completely proceeded in a living state from the body of its mother, close quote. So this motion asks for a special committee of parliamentarians to review the legal definition of personhood in Canada. The definition of fetal personhood and related Supreme Court jurisprudence is closely linked to the legal status of abortion. So the Liberal Party does not support any legislative action that would reopen the debate on abortion or might criminalize abortion. And if passed, Motion 312 can reverse the hard-earned rights of women by restricting their access to safe and legal abortions. The Liberal Party will oppose this motion. During the 2011 election campaign, the Prime Minister promised that his party would not change the laws on abortion. And I quote, as long as I am Prime Minister, we will not reopen the debate on abortion. We will leave the law as it stands. And I close quote. Now, Madam Speaker, the Conservative Party has a troubling history on the issue of election promises. You recall in 2004 when the Leader of the Opposition, now the Prime Minister, noted that the death penalty and abortion are not issues for the first Conservative government. Yet, In November 2007, halfway through the Conservative Party's first term in government, he broke that promise when his party refused to seek clemency for Ronald Alan Smith, a Canadian on death row in the United States. By refusing to seek clemency for Mr. Smith, the Conservative Party reversed the long-standing practice of seeking clemency for Canadians on death row abroad. And the Prime Minister and the government was also in contravention of the United Nations Convention to abolish the death penalty, of which Canada is a signatory. Now, Madam Speaker, with motion M312, the party is now reversing the Prime Minister's promise not to reopen the debate on abortion and to leave the law as it stands. It is clear that this government cannot, obviously, be trusted to keep its word on any questions of fundamental justice. By allowing this motion to stand, the Prime Minister can tell Canadians that the neutral stance of this motion on legal personhood does not open up the issue of abortion, that it is merely asking for a clarification on the definition of personhood and whether the law as defined in Section 2231 is outdated. Madam Speaker, this is shameful. And this government is being disingenuous, and so is the Prime Minister, obviously thinking that Canadians are simpletons. The discrepancy between the opinions of the member for Kitchener Centre and what he said in this House today and the neutral stance of his motion should be noted by this House. Today, on April the 26th in the Ottawa Metro, the member for Kitchener Centre, and I quote, said this: "This motion opens up the abortion question. If we reach a conclusion on when a child becomes a human being, then all of the other issues about abortion can be discussed with that as a bedrock foundation." So we are being disingenuous in the House when the Honourable Member stands up and makes a speech and says that this is being honest and that this is about a neutral motion. It is not being honest, and it is not about a neutral motion. And that is a cause for concern for those of us in the House, Madam Speaker. Because if the intention of the member for Kitchener Centre had been honest, he had choices. He says that subsection 2231 is outdated. Well, he did have a choice to directly amend the criminal code and propose a bill to do so if he believed that the criminal code was outdated. But he did not do that. The member said that section 2231 is unjust because the definition of personhood on that section does not include the fetus. Well, if he believed that the section was unjust, then he could have brought forward a bill to redefine personhood directly. And the Prime Minister should not have given this member the backdoor and the time, waste the time of the House, to use M312 as a backdoor to recriminalise abortion. But again, Madam Speaker, the history of this Prime Minister and this government is to always use a backdoor for contentious issues. One can recall the private member's bill of the member from Portage Lisker on gun registry, which the Prime Minister had said he would not deal with. And there we had a private member. Well, then we had the private member's bill by Ken Epp, who is no longer in this House, about the unborn victims of crime, which was about abortion again. And we see this backdoor trial balloon in which contentious issues are floated forward to see what the public would say. And if it became too hard to handle, then it would be withdrawn or it would be voted against by the government. And we're seeing this same kind of dishonest behavior, this ingenuous behavior in this House. And now we see that the committee will be asked to look at medical evidence of fetal personhood. In fact, medical evidence speaks to the viability of the fetus. How the fetus and how long the fetus can exist outside the maternal environment. And that is defined very clearly. You don't need a committee to see it. That viability of the fetus. How long it can live outside of the maternal environment. What are the times, what are the ages, etc., etc. It's all very clear. Internationally and nationally. And then it means that if that fetus is viable and the fetus is born before viability, it will only exist with a great deal of technology to help it to do so. What is surreptitious about this bill is that the medical definition of fetal viability does not define personhood. Nowhere does it and nowhere can it, because the Supreme Court is very clear when it ruled unanimously in the case of Tremble versus Daigle, and I quote, "The tasks of properly classifying a fetus in law and in science are different pursuits. Ascribing personhood to a fetus in law is a fundamentally normative task. It results in the recognition of rights and duties, a matter which falls outside the concerns of scientific classification. This is echoed again in the 1999 Supreme Court decision, Dobson, Litigation Guardian Off versus Dobson, in which Justice Corey, writing for the majority, asserted that the Supreme Court could not impose a duty of care upon a pregnant woman to watch her fetus or subsequently born child. To do so would result in very extensive and unacceptable intrusions into the bodily integrity, privacy, and autonomy rights of women. And Madam Speaker, I want to draw for you here a couple of scenarios. Let us imagine that this committee is formed. Let us imagine that this committee redefines personhood, as it is now said, and goes against all of the Supreme Court rulings to date. What is going to happen, Madam Speaker? At the age of medical fetal viability, which we now know is very clearly stated at 20 weeks, after 20 weeks, is the government and the state going to put a woman in jail if she does not wish to maintain that pregnancy within her person? Are they going to put her in jail and force her to keep this child until term? That outcome is not only ludicrous, it goes against every single human right that we can think of, Madam Speaker. I mean, it's shades of Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale all over again. This is an absolutely unacceptable thing to even imagine. So that is what this is going to be proposed. Are you going to force a woman? Because a child has to be carried and is in the woman's body until it comes out of the woman's body. It is totally dependent on the maternal body to keep it alive. So are we going to do this? Are we going to lock women up and force them to carry a child to term? Because the Constitution speaks very clearly of the woman and the security of a person. The Constitution and Charter, Madam Speaker, is the umbrella under which all laws are written and interpreted in this country. And the Supreme Court declared in 1998 the entirety of the country's abortion law to be unconstitutional, noting that, quote, forcing a woman by threat of criminal sanction to carry a fetus to term unless she meets certain criteria unrelated to her own priorities and aspirations. The law asserts that the woman's capacity to reproduce is to be subject not to her own control, but to that of the state. Were essentially, therefore, a breach of the woman's rights to security of the person. We have seen over and over, Madam Speaker, that the Supreme Court has shown that the security of the person is tantamount and is above every other piece of law. And because, as it is said, that the law, the woman's capacity to reproduce cannot be subject to anyone's control but her own, is a breach of the woman's right to security of the person. So that kind of idea of Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale would be obviously absolutely ludicrous right now. But we want to look at the issue of, does this government believe that it can then tell physicians what they can or cannot do? Madam Speaker, I can tell you this own government has said recently on the issue of CCSVI that the government should not be dictating guidelines to the medical profession. So then what is the use of this debate in the first place? If nothing that comes out of debate is going to be able to be anything but unconstitutional. You know, today we see the cut, committee budgets are cut by 30%, and yet we want to waste the government's time, everyone's time, and we create a committee to do something that is, in the end of the day, Madam Speaker, totally untenable and unconstitutional.
Resuming debate, the Minister of State.
Madam Speaker, I offer my response to Motion 312. The issue before us, in essence, is what is it to be human? This has been debated as long as man has existed. Scientists, theologians, philosophers, and doctors have all offered opinions. The House of Commons, however, is not a laboratory. It's not a house of faith, nor an academic setting, nor a hospital. It is a legislature, and a legislature deals with law. Specifically, in this case, subsection 2231 of the Criminal Code. The purpose of Motion 312, which we are considering today, is to open to question the validity of subsection 2231, which asserts that a child becomes a human being only at the moment of complete birth. If the legal definition of when one becomes a human being were to be adjusted so that a fetus is declared a legal person at some earlier stage of gestation, then the homicide laws would apply. As a necessary consequence, aborting fetal development anywhere in the potentially new adjusted period would be considered homicide. Thus, the ultimate intention of this motion is to restrict abortions at some development stage in Canada. It should be noted that subsection 2231 currently states that a child becomes a human being when it is completely proceeded in a living state from the body of its mother, irrespective of whether it has breathed, whether it has circulation separate from its mother, or whether the umbilical cord has been severed. The effect of subsection 2231 is to indicate the point in time at which homicide laws will apply. If someone intentionally injures a child before or during its birth, such that it dies after becoming a human being, then the criminal law treats it as a homicide. This is set out in subsection 2232. According to section 238 of the Criminal Code, when an injury is inflicted on a child in the act of birth, and that injury prevents the child from becoming a human being, this is an indictable offense, and it is punishable by a maximum penalty of life imprisonment. I would note as well that this offense, killing an unborn child in the act of birth, section 238, does not apply where a person acts in good faith to preserve the life of the mother, and in so doing causes the death of the unborn child, subsection 2382. For clarity, I wish to point out that section 2231 provides a legal test as to when Canada's criminal homicide laws apply to the death of a child. It is not, I say again, it is not a medical test, as motion 312 suggests. It has always been part of Canada's criminal law and reflects the well-established legal principle that the law does not recognize a fetus or unborn child as a legal person possessing rights separate from its mother until it is born alive. The Supreme Court of Canada has affirmed this interpretation for the purposes of the Criminal Code. The Supreme Court has also declared that the right to liberty guarantees a degree of personal autonomy over important decisions intimately affecting private life. The decision whether or not to terminate a pregnancy is essentially a moral decision. And in a free and democratic society, the conscience of the individual must be paramount to that of the state. This does not mean, however, that abortion is unregulated in Canada. Abortion is regulated through provincial government's responsibility for the delivery of health care services in conjunction with the medical profession. All provincial and territorial colleges of physicians and surgeons have declared that abortion is a medically necessary procedure and delivery of this medical service is regulated accordingly. Abortion is a very serious and long-lasting decision for women, and I want all women to continue to live in a society where decisions on abortion can be made one way or the other with advice from family and a medical doctor without the threat of legal consequences. I do not want women to go back to the previous era where some were forced to obtain abortions from illegal and medically dangerous sources. This should never happen in a civilized society. Whether one accepts it or not, abortion is and always will be part of society. There will always be dire situations where some women may have to choose the option of abortion. No matter how many laws some may want government to institute against abortion, it cannot be eliminated. It is part of the human condition. I cannot understand why those who are adamantly opposed to abortion want to impose their belief on others by way of the criminal code. There is no law that says that a woman must have an abortion. No one is forcing those that oppose abortion to have one. Within the free and democratic society of Canada, if one has a worldview based on a personal moral code that is somewhat different from others, then live according to those views, as long as they are within the current laws. On the other hand, citizens who are also living within the reasonable limits of our culture and who may not agree with another's particular moral principles should not be compelled to follow them by the force of a new law. As you know, Motion 312 is sponsored by a private member, not the government. I can confirm that as a member of the Conservative Caucus for nearly 8 years. The Prime Minister has been consistent with his position on abortion. As early as 2005 in the Montreal Convention, and in every federal election platform since, He has stated that a conservative government will not support any legislation to regulate abortion. While the issue may continue to be debated by some, as in a private member's motion here tonight, I state again that the government's position is clear. It will not reopen this debate. Mr. Speaker, I'm sure we all recognize that the issue of abortion raises strongly held and divergent views within and outside Parliament. However, I firmly believe that each of us should be able to pursue our lifestyle as long as it is within the boundaries of law and does not interfere with the actions of others. Trying to amend the legal rules governing abortion, as is intended by this motion, will not improve the situation. It will only lead to increased conflict as the attempt is made to turn back the clock. Society has moved on, and I don't believe this procedure or proposal should proceed. As well, it is in opposition to our government's position. Accordingly, I will not support Motion 312. I will vote against it, and I recommend that others oppose it. Thank you.
Resuming debate, the Honourable Member for Churchill.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Today, I would like to begin by expressing how honoured I am to be the newly appointed critic for the status of women for the NDP. Yay. It is an honour to follow in the footsteps, such as my colleague, the la députée de Gatineau, the MP for Nanaimo Cowichan, the MP for London Fanshawe, Judy Washalisha-Lease, dynamic women such as Dawn Black, Alexa McDonough, Audrey McLaughlin, Margaret Mitchell, and Rosemary Brown, and Grace McGuinness, and so many others. It is an honor to speak out on behalf of our party, the NDP, that has always been at the forefront of fighting for women's rights and gender equality. And in that fight for gender equality as status of women critic, I'd like to put out a warning to the Prime Minister that in this House and in fighting for gender equality, I'll be using the F word. Yes, the F word, feminism. The approach that sees and understands well that women and men must be equal. And that women of my generation will be taking that word back to say that we don't want to go back, but we want to move forward. Since 2006, consecutive conservative governments have rolled back the clock on gender equality. They removed the word equality from the status of women mandate. They eliminated the court challenges program and pay equity legislation. They've cut advocacy, services, research, and have shown nothing but inaction when it comes to violence against women, and particularly, most notably, violence against Aboriginal women. Every step along the way, they have sought to silence women's voices. And every step along the way, they've sought to destroy the foundations of our work to achieve gender equality. But perhaps the most pointed attack on women has been in the area of reproductive rights. And here we are again today, debating a conservative motion that essentially reopens the debate on a woman's right to choose. The reality is that the issue of abortion was settled in 1988. In 1988, the Supreme Court of Canada struck down Canada's abortion law, ruling that it was unconstitutional. The justices found that the law violated Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms because it infringed on a woman's right to life, liberty, and security of person. That was 1988, almost 25 years ago. A generation ago. And this decision came about after years of work from women who from across the country sent the message that women ought to have the right to choose, that women ought to have the right to decide their future, that women ought to have the ability to define their destiny. And that fight also took place in the House of Commons. Our leader in 1987, Audrey McLaughlin, spoke out clearly, saying that, quote, limiting the right to the personal care and control of one's body is a violation of a most basic fundamental right, that of reproductive choice. As Ms. McLaughlin and others have pointed out, abortions if they are not performed legally in medical facilities under the direction of a physician will happen in much less favorable circumstances. As ugly as it may seem, women must not be forced to return to those ugly circumstances of using coat hangers, vacuum cleaners, or putting themselves in the hands of quacks. It's an ugly reality, Ms. McLaughlin said, but it is a reality. There were caravans, protests, lobby meetings, speeches, and debates. And the issue was settled in 1988. When Canadians have been asked time and time again, a majority have supported a woman's right to choose. And here we are, 2012, seeing this government reopen the debate on abortion. And they haven't been truthful about it either. Time and time again, the Prime Minister and members of his party have said that they will not reopen the abortion debate. But I quote, "As long as I am Prime Minister, we are not opening the abortion debate," Prime Minister declared. "The government will not bring forward any such legislation, and any such legislation that is brought forward will be defeated as long as I am Prime Minister." This comes from an article in the Globe and Mail from Wednesday, December 21st, 2011. An article around that same time quoted the Prime Minister as saying, "As long as I'm Prime Minister, we are not reopening the abortion debate." This is the Conservative Party's Trojan horse agenda. During an election, and even here in the House of Commons, they tell Canadians one thing, and then they win government, and now a majority government, and we see what they truly mean. If the Prime Minister didn't want a woman's right to choose to be debated, we wouldn't be here tonight. What's interesting is that they felt the need to tell Canadians something else. They felt the need to tell Canadians something else so that these same Canadians would vote for them. They waited to win a majority and then to uncover their hidden agenda. I believe that the Conservatives have some lessons to learn from their sister party in Alberta, the Wild Rose Party, who, despite predictions that it would win a majority government, ended up with no more than a few seats. Why? Because they scared people. They talked about conscience rights and turning the clock back on the rights of women, same-sex rights, and so on. And the more people heard from them, the more they turned away. Interestingly, a number of Conservative MPs very openly showed serious support for the Wild Rose Party. Maybe they can watch closely enough to learn a lesson. Canadians will not stand for a veiled attempt to have our rights turned back. Women will not stand for a rolling back of the clock on women's rights. My generation will not stand to go backward. Yesterday I was inspired by the so many young women that organized and came together around in front of the House of Commons, in front of Parliament, to speak out, to stand up for our right to choose. Many of these young women, some of them weren't even around in 1988, but certainly many of these young women, like me, were very young when this decision was made. We know from history books the women and men who fought hard to have a woman's right to choose respected. We've read in our history books how Canada, slowly, through the work of so many people outside and inside Parliament, became a model for the world for gender equality. And we've all known that there's much further than that we have to go. But the reality is that under this government, we're only going back.
And I would like to share the message as a young woman, a woman from a generation that must fight to go back to the rights and the situation that we might have in a country like Canada in the future. We have seen a government that systematically wants to go back in terms of its approach to the rights of women, the rights of minorities, the rights of Aboriginals. And tonight's debate is a debate that we need to have in order to say, yes, we are opposed to it. We're opposed to an agenda that seeks to send Canadian women and all Canadians back to a time that occurred long ago. But I find some hope, and it gives me a great deal of comfort to know that we are part of a party, the New Democratic Party, that stands united in this House, that stands united in saying that we are opposed to Motion 312, that we oppose reopening the debate on abortion, and that we stand together saying that we must move forward when it comes to women's rights and equality of both genders.
Prime Minister, and his party, on behalf of our caucus, a message for on behalf of women and men from across the country. My message is that this issue has been decided. A woman's right to reproductive choice is a human right. And in Canada, in 2012, a woman's right to choose is not up for negotiation.
The period provided for private members' business has now expired, and the order drops to the bottom of the order of precedence on the order paper.